Before we get started, I want to say a big thank you to everyone who has stepped in through our Patreon site to support what Skirmish Play does, to kind of help our mission out, to help us do some unique things. That's made it possible for us to upgrade some of our equipment this year. We're really excited to take it out there. We did that over the summer, to take it out there, make some things happen this fall, some kind of unique things. And you guys with Patreon have really made that possible. We hope more folks will jump on board with us. Come on and support us. You can check it out at patreon.com/skirmishplay. Definitely want to, to have anybody who is, excited about what we're doing over here, excited about our mission, to jump in and come out and support us. So that's definitely a critical part of what we do. So thanks a lot, and enjoy the podcast.
This is Bart Eisley. I'm here with Ryan Yeaman for the latest edition of the Skirmish Play podcast. And right off the bat, we'd like to say thank you to the SB Podcast presenting sponsor, C&G Paving. If you want your paving or asphalt job done right the first time, you want C&G to knock it out. With 30 years of experience under owner Jeff Gray, this family-owned local business has been taking care of roads, parking lots, and driveways across Central Virginia for decades. And with a 5-star rating on Facebook, you know they're going to get it right. Give them a call at 540-456-6179 today for a free estimate. So we're getting to towards the end of football season here in Central Virginia, because we're down to three teams. A rough weekend for local football teams. They went 3-9 or 3-9, one ball games. So a rough weekend, and you got to see a couple of you got to see one win, and you got to see Goochland kind of get it done, and we're excited to see Goochland keep moving and kind of as expected, they get the job done.
Yeah, familiar territory for them, playing at home, and this game sort of, while it wasn't raining, that field was just so damp. And that was conditions anywhere that anybody was playing on grass.
Harrisonburg especially, too, where Almar was.
Monticello's the only team that got to stay dry, apparently. But, real sloppy conditions. It's cold outside. Goochland doesn't mind that. And they were able to roll just pretty effectively against a Brunswick team that used to be really, really good. Numbers not so strong for that team. So the depth, like it always does for a 2A school that has way more kids playing football than everybody else, it really starts to show in the second half. And they pulled away. They got the big man rolling, Jasper Carter, in the second half. It was a little bit more spread out early on, but once he started just sort of piling up first downs, that was it. And they get a rematch now with Amelia. It's second time in 3 weeks. They played them for their season finale, their regular season finale, and it should be good. Amelia took down Nottoway. So these are all district opponents that Goochland's seen before. They know what to expect, and they get another home game by virtue of that Pequosin loss earlier in the season, a couple weeks ago. So they're feeling pretty good about themselves, and as they should.
Yeah, and I think the other winners, you had Louisa Monticello able to get the job done and moving on. And Monticello now really takes a big jump up in competition, I think, with Brookville. That's going to be a really tough one. But, against a Waynesboro team that has made some runs in the past, are sort of legendary for that ability to make noise from a lower seed. Monticello was able to survive that, take care of business really quickly, do some good work on special teams in particular. Mm-hmm. They got it going.
They rolled in that one, and that's a team that, second time in 3 years they've beaten them, mm-hmm. and beaten them badly. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe they just have their number right now. This group of seniors has seen them before, and Jarrell knows exactly what to do against them. I think the best Monticello postseason sort of rushing record belongs to him from 2 years ago. So he knows he's going to have success there. And, you survive in advance, you win your last home game. And
that's all that really matters.
Yeah.
Speaking of survive in advance, Louisa ran into a much tougher Cortland squad in the rematch of those two teams, and, had some trouble. getting the job done against them. And like you said, so maybe conditions play into some of that. Made a little bit of the equalizer there.
Two really familiar teams. I mean, the coaches are best friends. They work with each other every mm-hmm. week. They talk to each other all the time. So you knew that was going to be a battle. And when a team goes 0-4 and wins 6 straight coming to the playoffs, there's something different about them.
No question.
So that's a far cry from week one to what Louisa saw. 13-7 at the break. Hmm. I think everyone was a little nervous. I mean, first week you expect some fat to get cut from mm-hmm. the playoff teams, but we start losing Louisa in the first round of playoffs, and you're like, now we're cutting into the meat. That's a pretty good team to be losing the first round, but they recovered nicely. Defensively, they were perfect in the second half, and they just rolled. They got the running game together with Malik Bell having a huge second half. So good to see them advance. Now they get a huge one with Monica.
Yeah, frustrating to watch. The teams that lost, it was sort of a grab bag of frustrating circumstances. You know, Charlottesville went down to a Salem team. That is a really difficult place to play. And they never quit. Never threw in the towel. Sam Neill threw 382 and a couple of weeks ago. That would have been his season total. But the last 2 weeks of the year, he's just been really, really good through the air. And they didn't quit, and I think that was some of the the Twitter buzz that you saw down there in Charlottesville.
Yeah, from the Salem people, yeah.
Salem school people were talking about how Charlottesville just did not throw in the towel against them. And you know, that's a testament to that group of seniors and everything that they've kind of brought to the table, and you know how hard they've worked, and they didn't want it to go away. But Salem is a very good team, and you know, we know what has been Charlottesville's Achilles heel most of the year.
Yeah, I mean, stopping the run has just been the real struggle. And all the games that they've won in some barn burners. But teams just sort of, they fish that part out, and they just start going back to that well over and over again. Yeah. And it's really just sort of, it's dogged them. Any of the really tough opponents they've had to go up against, I mean, stopping Louisa, that's not going to be easy. And then yeah, I think you point to the Albemarle game that they fell there. That's a tough one. Maybe if they win that game there, it changes their seeding a little bit. Maybe they get a little more favorable advantage. But Albemarle was able to run the ball on them.
But eventually, they're going to run into a team like Salem.
Yes, and I mean, there's no avoiding that down the road, and especially
not in that region.
And especially, the 4A classification is brutal with just heavy downhill runners.
Yep.
But it's also this time of year. This is where the World War II offenses seem to really thrive. And when you're running, there's a reason Goochland is always sort of in this position. It's because mm-hmm. teams just don't know how to slow it down in November. And sometimes it's all you can do in November. You can't really just air it out when it's 20 degrees outside.
It's very difficult. I think that you've got to have a special set of receivers, a special quarterback, and an offensive line that can protect. I mean, it takes a lot of pieces to make a passing game this time of year work.
At the high school level, is football really that complicated of the game? Run the ball, stop the run, usually you win.
Absolutely. So, Charlottesville kind of had to get out of character the last couple of weeks, and you know it worked in one instance, didn't really work in the next one. But that's
great,
you know, that's
season
football.
For them, though. Great,
great
season.
Year.
That was a fun team to watch.
Yeah, just a blast. And when they were grooving right there in that middle of the season, they were a lot of fun to watch. So, really strong year. Albemarle took it on the chin at Harrisonburg. That's a pretty good football team, a really good quarterback, and a good running back. Field conditions weren't great. That made things tough on everybody. But Harrisonburg handled it a little bit better. And A.C. White, man, he's a really good quarterback. He did a nice job against Charlottesville. They sort of survived against him early in the regular season. And they obviously had built some confidence and really improved as the year went on. I got to see them in both those games, and very clear that they had made significant strides. So a tough one for Albemarle. A number of key seniors who have been a big part of that turnaround in their careers, you know, Jorvin Maupins and Jaquan Andersons and those guys who have, you know, really stepped up and been big time players for them. So, but a lot back in the fold for them next year. You know, guys like Eric Taylor's back on defense. That guy is like a billion tackles this year. He's been all over the place, and they bring some other key spots. They have some young guys that are back, and you know, they lose guys like Nal Arnold and Chris Anderson. That's going to be tough back there on that secondary, but a lot of new blood, a lot of guys who can really play. And it's going to be fun to see that's going to be a new Albemarle. I think that's a
different identity, I think.
Yeah, yeah, definitely a different era sort of starts with this next group of kids. So
yeah, and, I mean, Albemarle season was just kind of had this weird aura around it. I mean, October was so good for them, and then it just sort of Powhatan, they run into that. And then,
definitely,
you know, the Western game is really close, and then you know, Harrisonburg is obviously much improved. It's just they after that Mountain View win, they got into a little bit of a funk, couldn't quite get out of it, and you know, they find I think Charlottesville, that win is sort of their pinnacle. They reached that moment, and they just plateaued at the wrong time, maybe. I don't know.
I think it was more of a roller coaster for them because it felt like they were up and down and just kind of all over the place. But I agree that the Charlottesville game, that was probably the peak for them. But you know, just one of those years where you know, they had a lot of players, they had a lot of things back in the rain, and just didn't really fit together quite properly like it did last year.
And they lost a lot of talent. I think we have a greater appreciation for just how good that senior class. And we thought they were good.
Yeah,
and I think you see just how much glue they brought to the table.
Massey, Foster,
I mean,
Lawrence Brown. Those guys were really good players, man. I mean, and you know, you got to give it to Albemarle that they had so much talent that it didn't look like it would be a rebuilding year. And I don't really think that it was. I think next year is going to be a transition year. Maybe it's not rebuilding, but it's going to be very different.
Yeah, and when you and anytime you make a change at quarterback, where the quarterback has been so important to your offensive scheme, I mean,
absolutely,
that's what happens. But I think we'll see more from Albemarle going down the road.
No question about it. And Orange takes a tough loss. Very difficult, heck of a job by Orange to get in and scrap their way into the playoffs. But a really, really difficult matchup when you go to Brook Point, and obviously they ran into it. But a heck of a season by a really athletic group out there that did some really, you know, really good things and played smart football a lot of the year and played heads up football. Darius Miner might be one of the most versatile guys in the area with everything he brings to the table.
Yeah, it was a really fun receiving core between Ty Warren and Chris Washington and all those guys. You know, Kenyon Carter comes back next year. That's huge for them. And we'll see if they can sort of replace those guys on the edge and maybe get a little more fundamental. I mean, this was a very different version of Orange County than we saw in years prior. You know, yes, they have Jalen Alexander, and that's going to be good for them going forward.
Absolutely.
Really key. Maybe this team looks more like the 2015 team and 2016 teams
could
that
be.
Were just sort of power inside running. You know, that identity for Orange is kind of different than what they're used to. You know, last two decades. This version, what we saw, seemed more like what we saw in 2006 when they made those big runs, and 2007, Quentin Hunter and those kids, and Bradley Starks. So we'll see what Orange puts together going forward. But having your quarterback like that and Kenyon Carter come back is huge. He did a lot of passing. You know, just a heady kid and a tough kid. Hung in there all year. And, you know, not all the time in the world back there to get rid of the ball, which isn't easy. And so we'll see if Orange's offensive line, defensive line, those were young this year. We'll see if they add some depth and some talent and turn this team into to another playoff team. 3 years in a row for them, that's huge. I know what that means for that senior class. And, you know, that helps to add the pressure to this next senior class, you know, the group of 2019, to see if they can keep this run going.
So no question, those were all games, those were all road games where those teams lost. So they weren't expected to win based on seeding. On the other hand, the Division II private school squads did not have...
Saturday was weird.
Saturday was definitely weird. Blue Ridge was probably the most surprising loss, I felt like, of the weekend. Because, you know, just transitive property stuff. I mean, Covenant had beaten Christchurch. Blue Ridge had very little trouble with Covenant. Christchurch felt like the right matchup. Maybe they got healthy at the right time. They just played the right game at the right time. But a tough loss for a Blue Ridge team that was in the midst of a pretty convincing title defense.
Yeah, and Christchurch, I mean, they're about 5 years removed from I think it was 2011, they just put together this amazing season. So 6 years removed from that. And it's been a while for them. With Blue Ridge, I mean, you wonder if maybe a little bit of the Benedictine loss, sort of there's a hangover effect into this one. I mean, Blue Ridge takes the lead late in that game, so you figure they're going to hold on. And Christchurch, I mean, when you've got nothing to play for, sometimes it just works in your favor.
Yeah. I mean, we got to give it up to Ed Homer over there at Christchurch. He's a heck of a football coach.
Really nice guy, too.
Very nice guy. Great staff that, you know, Bluers had and Tim Thomas, but they were up against a tough opponent, an equal opponent, for sure. And I think that, you know, when you've had experience in those games, and they've got experience on that team too, Darbo kid that ran for all the touchdowns against Blue Ridge, he's been around a while. He's a really good athlete. He's a big, physical kid. And sometimes you're just going to run into guys like that. And, you know, maybe it looked like it was Blue Ridge and everybody else in that division. I felt like, even going into this playoffs, even with the Benedictine loss, I felt like that was one you could just write off to how good they were. But it turned out that, you know, you got to come to play every week, and Christchurch came to play.
Yeah, and the playoffs, there's just a different element of urgency that kicks in for some teams. I think with Blue Ridge, we're going to see probably a meaner team next year because of this result. I think they're not going to come out and take anybody lightly. After that. And I think this also, you can chalk it up a little bit to the disparity in some of the opponents that they play. I mean, there would be games where Blue Ridge didn't have to come out and play in the first quarter, and they'd be up 40-0.
Yeah.
And then you have Flint Hill and Benedictine, which are different stories. So I think some of that yo-yoing that happens when you're a Division II team and, you know, you're playing a Hargrave and then, you know, run into a hard opponent, it's just, it's weird. Yeah. And, you know, they get to the playoffs, and I think they found out very quickly that Christchurch was going to make this a game. This was not going to be something that was given away. And that can be tough against it if you're not ready for it.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we've seen that happen in playoff games before where a team just shows up. They're ready to roll. Tough loss for Blue Ears. They bring a lot back next year. There's a lot of reason to be excited up there for what they're kind of bringing to the table. I mean, it's just a lot of, you know, Xavier Kane's a class of 19 kid, so yep. He's going to be back. Xavier Kane's a heck of a quarterback, so it's going to be fun to see how they use him next year and kind of how he evolves over the next offseason. I'm sure he'll be hitting a lot of camps and that kind of thing. Just a lot of guys that should be back and should have them ready to, you know, take a shot at winning 2 out of 3 over the last 3 years. So a tough loss. So the Covenant also suffered a tough loss against Norfolk Christian, but Norfolk Christian there just wasn't a lot of, like, common opponents between them and some of the other D2 schools. And I think that I think that just even early on, you could tell that that's a pretty darn good football team. They play really, you know, pretty sound, fundamental football. They got good runner, really good running back. The quarterback is one of those guys who's built more like a fullback. So he's very tough to bring down, and he can whip it. Whip it around a little bit, and he was pretty good on the ground too. Had a stretch for a touchdown that was pretty critical. I think Norfolk Christian was just a really good full team. It was a heck of a job, though. I think we've already said this a couple of times on the podcast. What Covenant went through injuries wise?
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, just to get
those aren't just good players; those are great players. Yeah. That you're losing to Rick Weaver and Donovan Jackson.
Rick Weaver and Donovan Jackson are two of the best running backs in the area.
Yeah,
and they lost both of them. And they just kept grinding.
And at a school like that, they can bring some snaps to the other side of the field. And
yeah,
it's just that's a lot.
It's a lot of guys to
lose.
And
for a team that loves to run the ball physically, I mean, that's ripping your heart out.
That's good. I mean, you got to give it up to those guys and how frustrating that is. But then for Covenant to continue to bounce back and just keep winning, the North Cross win is bonkers. I still go back to just a pretty amazing feat to pull off. I felt like that was just going to be a really tough one for them. They went down there and got it done in kind of crazy fashion. A heck of a season for them. John Hemme, man. There's a lot of good quarterbacks in this area right now, but John Hemme is the right guy for his team. Kind of like Sam Neill over there at Charlottesville. He's the right guy for his team. He runs things right. He does everything they ask him to do. He was helping out on defense. Looked like he was a little banged up or just kind of worn out, kind of running for his life a little bit against Norfolk Christian. But a heck of a season from that guy, too, to kind of keep everything together. You talked about those blue guys for Albemarle. He and Jonas Sanker and Nick Sanker, Solowski, Cole Harvey, those guys. Yeah, that senior class really stepped up in a big way for Covenant this year.
Yeah, and you know, they lose a lot from this team, and they have some big pieces coming back. I mean, having Jonas Sanker come back is huge for them. But there's going to be a lot of work to do to try and put this back together the same way. But you know, that's the point.
Seth Wilson even said it after the game. He said, like, we got a lot of pieces. We got a lot of things to figure out. We also got to figure out how to get 6 or 7 linemen to come out and play. And I think that when Covenant has linemen, Covenant's good. because they always seem to have skilled guys who can run their system and do their thing, you know, well. If they can find linemen, they're going
to
be all right.
But there are two seasons that program always points to, you know, the 2008 year and now this one.
Yeah.
I think this is as good as they've ever been.
I would agree.
And, you know, congratulations to them on putting together one heck of a year. And really, especially in a year with so much adversity, that's not easy to do.
No question about it. Woodbury was the last team that lost. A disappointing, frustrating performance for them up at Episcopal. Had trouble holding on to the ball. But, you know, what was the atmosphere like? It's always bonkers.
Yeah, I mean, just a great scene. You know, that's as well attended a football game and at the high school level as you're going to see. It doesn't matter if you go see the, you know, state title games in Scott Stadium. I feel like because the alumni for both schools get out there, it's just it's impossible to find parking. And you know, they call it the bowl for a reason. It looks like it. I mean, yeah, it was great vibe. Both teams. I mean, Episcopal's physicality on the defensive line was a problem from the word go, and something that Woodbury just never really was able to give Will Wideman enough time to work downfield. So the passing game didn't sort of take off the way that they had hoped. A couple fumbles in that one set. I mean, Episcopal got the short field and scored two of their touchdowns in the first half on that. It's 21-0 at the break. That game looks like it is absolutely over. Woodbury comes out, shuts them out in the second half, gets seven of their own. You know, nice play from Wideman to Khalid Thomas, and you know, makes that a much more respectable score. It was an interesting game in that it had all the makings of a blowout, and then Woodbury, you know, with pride on the line, they haven't been blown out on that field in a long, long time. It's the first time they've lost on that field since 2007. So there's a lot to play for when even if it feels like the score is out of hand. And I thought they did a really nice job of doing that. And speaking of the coaching jobs, I mean, Seth Wilson did. Scott Braswell comes into Woodbury that has a very specific identity, particularly offensively. He finds Will Wideman, gets him to play quarterback and sort of pick up right where Lindell Stone left off. I mean, this team didn't look all that different from last year's group. And he talked about it a little bit after the game that he felt like the program sort of took him in and nurtured him as opposed to him coming in there and just reading the riot act. This is how we're going to run it and this is how we're going to do it. And so it was an interesting, for a boarding school like that, I think it was kind of cool the way that happened. This senior class is like, hey, this is the way we've been doing things for a long time. They kept a lot of that assistant coaching staff. And so they were able to put together this little transitional year that was highly successful for them. And we'll see how many elements of it that they'll keep going forward. But I just think it's kind of a neat thing when the players and coaches sort of come to like a compromise of, all right, this is what we'd like to do. And the coach, well, this is what I'm comfortable with. And I mean, a great season for them. You know, they three-way tie with the Prep League champions in Collegiate and St. Chris. Kind of funky, but good season nonetheless. And certainly one that I think a lot of people didn't expect that they would have, considering all that they lost.
Man, Will Wideman threw for 21-27 this year. Like 2,000 yards, 27 touchdowns, only six picks. You know, he was sacked a fair amount, but other than that, a heck of a year. And DeQuise Carter, I mean, 45 catches for 955 and like 13 touchdowns.
Yeah, he was the most effective receiver all year.
That's we have not had too many, you know, maybe Daniel Lieb with Monticello back a few years ago in 2007 when they won a state title. There have not been that many receiving performances over a year for a really good team that would match that. A heck of a year for Carter.
Yeah, and it's sort of we'll see if they can find the pieces to replace a Carter and a Thomas. But it's a three-year run for Woodbury where it was Zach Roderick and you know, Terrell Janna, and then Roderick graduates. And then last year it was Janna with Carter and Thomas, and this year Carter and Thomas. And just,
good,
I mean,
receivers,
unbelievable run in terms of effective receivers making
every
the quarterbacks.
Every time you threw the ball to Carter, he's worth 21 yards.
And that's the thing. The kid was a deep threat. And you look at some of the – he'll have 80-yarders, but it was a screen pass for 4 yards. he'll have 80-yarders that were bombs over the top.
Yeah.
So he did it just about every other way. And just – that was a really fun group of kids to watch. Great career for them. Obviously not the way they want it to go out, but a precedent gets set. I mean, what's cool about that rivalry is it is a rivalry right now. Mm-hmm. Woodbury had won so many in a row before 2014, and now Episcopal has won two of the last four. You got the awkward tie in 2015. and so, yeah, these teams hate each other and they're beating each other at a, you know, an even rate. So next year it's going to make that bonfire going into Woodbury. It's going to be awesome.
Should be good. But before we go, we want to hand out some awards. I want to start with the C&G Road Grader of the Week. And it's a guy who got it done for an offense that always likes to grind it out, always likes to get the road paved.
Yeah, Ethan Kopczynski, you know, great offensive lineman for a program that just seems to churn them out at a pretty regular rate. This is, I mean, you look at the way that this group has just sort of continually, week in, week out, regardless of whether Jasper Carter is healthy or not. You know, he went, got dinged up in the midway through the season, just creates holes. So, you know, John King gets his, and Devin McCray gets his, and Cole Knuckles gets his, and it's just really impressive the way that that group comes out. You know, they keep it pretty straightforward. They're just a group of maulers. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's nothing sexy about what they do. They just get upfield and beat on people. Yeah. It's just, it's pretty awesome to watch. And this is a big group. This is a big offensive lineman. I mean, Kopczynski's, he's not who you want to get into a knife fight with. He's a pretty intimidating dude. And he's got some good guys around him. But he's had a great year all year, and you got to see it on display on Friday, and particularly against a Brunswick defense that didn't really know what to do about him.
So, heck of a performance from him, and Gushen still has probably a lot of football left to play. Another team that might have a lot of football left to play, Louisa County, and the Offensive Player of the Week, it's got to be Malik Bell. He 22 carries, 184 yards, 2 touchdowns, including an 80-yarder. I mean, that was the backbreaker.
Yeah, I think the season's on the line at that point. Mm-hmm. There's no bigger run that he's had before, and that really just turned the tide for them.
And this was what you thought was probably going to happen, because Louisa did a great job of spreading carries all year. But when it comes down to it, you're going to want to give the ball to Malik Bell. You're going to want to give the ball to Joe Whalen. This is a problem, too, is that, like, the dudes they spread it around to are all pretty good. Raekwon Jones is pretty good, too. You know what I mean? You got players.
Jared Hunter's not bad. Yeah.
Jared Hunter can play. I mean, and we haven't seen the Brandon Smith experience in full capacity yet.
Yeah, offensively, yeah.
Offensively. Yeah, we know what it is defensively. But yeah, you knew they were going to give the ball to Malik Bell. You knew they were going to kind of put it in that guy's hands. He is a gutty, gritty guy who I feel I've seen a lot of games over the last few years where he's been the guy that if you need three, you go get it.
Yeah, and I think what you like about his style.
And Whalen's blocking for him when that happens a lot of times. Oh, Whalen's pretty darn good blocker.
It's the most underrated part of what these backs do is when they don't get the ball, they fly to the edge and just
blow people up.
And, you know, they hit harder there than they do anywhere else.
No question. When they're clearing the way for their buddies, man, the Louisa backfield is awesome.
Yeah, so, I mean, with Bell, though, I mean, it's people wrap him up and he just, he'll be spinning, he's falling backwards for 3 yards, and then he recovers. It's just this level of balance and I don't know, just instinct that you don't see from a lot of the like big physical runners. And he's got it, and it just allows him to get
a little ballet to him.
Yeah, yeah. Gets the short yardage gains, but then also can turn his 80-yard run. That was, I mean, if you go watch the highlights of it, it was pretty awesome. It looks like he's gonna go down at any moment. So, just really fun to watch. And I think those kind of things, when you have a back that just sort of churns up yards, I mean, it gets your linemen so fired up. It gets your sidelines jacked up.
Run blocking is fun. Pass blocking is less fun.
And the physical runs, there's just something to it. Anybody can take a sort of a run around the edge, go untouched, and, you know, yay. But there's just something more fun about it, just like lining up with somebody's shoulders and just knocking them on their ass. And, yeah, getting downfield.
The you know, and that gives us another guy who did a lot of knocking people around over there at Monticello, Defensive Player of the Week. Got to go to Garrett Porterfield. Porterfield has been a force all year, and according to our guy who was out there on Friday night, Porterfield set up shop in the backfield and just lived there. And he just made a lot of big plays. He's been doing that all year. His numbers are nuts for the year. 134, this is regular season only. This doesn't include the playoff game. 134 total tackles, 36 tackles for a loss, which is a absurd number. He was making all the plays, 10 sacks. I mean, Garrett Porterfield's been all over the place. He was all over the place again. And really a big key for them stopping and, you know, Waynesboro team that they had a, had an upset on its
mind. And I think the clear difference between Monticello this year and last year is that they have somebody like that that's making this defense that much more effective. We saw how good this team was offensively last year. Just needed to find that other side of the ball. They've got it. And, I mean, look what look at the Albemarle game with Monticello. And it's sort of their biggest win of the year, I'd probably circle. I mean, that is an unbelievable performance he plays against Jaquan Anderson and sort of that spy role. Mm-hmm. So this guy is very versatile. He can do all the different things the coaching staff needs from him.
And I mean, he's doing that, what he did Friday against the option, and then he's doing, like you said, against Almar, against the spread. It's not easy to be a linebacker who can be, you know, we know Brandon Smith is that kind of guy. It doesn't matter what offense it is, he's going to hunt you. And Garrett Porterfield has been doing some hunting of his own this year. So, heck of a performance.
That's having that guy that you can give a different assignment to every week. I mean, that's just a fun part for a coach, mm-hmm. is knowing you have somebody on your roster like that.
No question about it. So, that wraps up this week. We got the second week of the playoffs we're going to really jump into next week. Certainly check out Weekly Briefing a little later this week. We'll have a lot of details on those games. So, thanks a lot for listening.